This is Take Care, a health and wellness show produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Jason Smith.
And I'm Catherine Loper.
According to the World Health Organization, health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or malady. That definition is similar to what our next guest defines as public health.
It wasn't always the case that your government was willing or able to help fund health education and prevention. Can you imagine a world without hospitals? Dr. Wayne Lamort joins us now to discuss public health, past and present. He's a professor of epidemiology at Boston University School of Public Health. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Lamort.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on the show.
I have a feeling that the perception of what public health is among members of the public varies. So if you could just start by telling us what our current understanding of public health is.
Well, I think that the public understanding probably hasn't changed too much in the last 100 years. Around in the 1920s, someone provided a definition which was something along the lines of the science of preventing disease, prolonging life, and promoting physical health through sanitation, control of infection, education of individuals, and provision of healthcare services. Certainly, all of those things are still relevant today, but I think that in the current age, things are changing quite a bit, and now I think that a more realistic definition includes dealing with issues like mental health, violence, substance abuse, addiction, and disparities in healthcare. So things have changed quite a bit, but I think that that is certainly, in terms of the field of public health, we certainly embrace all those additional things.
Was there anything that came before that definition of public health in that 100-year mark or so you described?
Sure. Well, if you go back centuries ago, people were, of course, concerned about health, but there was little knowledge or understanding about the factors that caused it or how to prevent it. So people frequently relied on religion or even myths to explain poor health. Things such as Pandora's box became an explanation for bad health or perhaps God's punishment for our sins. And then we really didn't have methodologies for identifying the causes of disease or for testing possible ways to prevent disease or cure it. All of that evolved very, very slowly over centuries. And you can look at certain developments and very slowly see the emergence of ideas that show the importance, for example, of simply collecting data around health, like why people were dying. So in the late 1500s, some of the clerks in parishes in the United Kingdom began collecting information, recording information, rather, about causes of death. And in the century following that, people began to look at that data to write treatises on what were the leading causes of death, for example. That eventually, in the mid-1800s, evolved into a more formal recording of health events.
I'm assuming our motivation to maintain public health has changed over time. I mean, I think we all think our local public health official in our county, their goal is to make sure we're all healthy, but I'm sure that motivation has changed since the 1800s.
Well, that's true. I think much of the public health system that we know today actually began to emerge largely in the United Kingdom in the mid-1800s. And one of the big motivating factors at that time was they identified the fact that health conditions among the working poor were absolutely atrocious, and their life expectancy was very brief. One of the big motivating factors was the monarchy, which was interested in keeping the state strong, and their view was that in order to do that, they needed a healthy workforce. So much of the motivation for developing a public health system in the United Kingdom was really for the good of the government or the state, if you will.
And our ideas about health have evolved as science and medicine have evolved. Do you think that the discoveries and theories or laws and the social norms that you described has affected our ideas about health more?
Well, I think it's really a combination of those things. So, for example, if you go back to the 13, 14, 1500s, where people in Europe were periodically being assailed by bubonic plague, there were a lot of crazy, ineffective ways of dealing with that, either preventing it or treating it, which were largely ineffective. But their ability to identify things that could prevent it or treat it was largely because they didn't have the methodology. They didn't have any notion of collecting data in a formal way and comparing health outcomes in groups of people, which is really the basis of modern epidemiology. So that methodology began to grow in the 1800s, and around the middle of the 20th century, I guess around 1948, there were two large studies that really provided a great boost to the methodology. Certainly our knowledge of medicine and physiology, pathology, all of that has also greatly contributed to our understanding as well. So it's important to recognize the fact that the methodology of public health and the advancements in medicine have really kind of worked together in a very synergistic way to improve health and in our understanding of the causes of poor health.
So that brings us sort of up to more modern times and health becoming more of a focus of the general population. What changes from then till now have happened to public health?
In the 20th century, there was an enormous amount of research that was done, and it was really focused on identifying causes of disease and really kind of picking apart the etiology of diseases. And in terms of public health, there was an enormous amount of effort focused on sanitation and also a lot of emphasis on personal behaviors. Many of the public health interventions were really focused on trying to get people to engage in healthy behaviors. So there was a lot of individual counseling.
What are some of the obstacles to maintaining public health, especially as it's come to a more individual level? I'm thinking about misinformation and what's harder when you're trying to reach individuals and have individuals make changes in their own lives.
Well, I think a lack of understanding of health and quite frankly, a lack of understanding risk and evaluating risk and making comparisons among the general public is really still important. It's rampant. And as a result, we have too many people who smoke, too many people who drink to excess, and so forth. Public health is not really well understood, and its benefits are not fully appreciated. It's been largely focused on prevention, so if it's done well, health problems are diminished or even non-existent. And in a sense, you could sort of think about successful public health being all of the epidemics of infectious disease that never happened. And in contrast, medicine is really much more dramatic. You know, there are sirens and flashing lights and shows on TV, and medicine is much more visible. So most of the resources go to medicine rather than to public health. So I think that one of the obstacles is that public health is largely underfunded.
Where do you see the future of public health in the next few decades? How do you think it will change?
Well, I think that one thing that we can see happening is that there's going to be a much greater emphasis on the social determinants and environmental conditions that either cause health problems or that can be manipulated to improve health. So, for example, take the issue of cardiovascular disease, heart disease. Certainly in the latter half of the 20th century, we identified smoking, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, poor diet, and much of our intervention was focused on getting people to change their behaviors around those things, individual counseling. And now we're focusing more, and this is what the future will be, we're focusing more on the more distal risk factors. In other words, the things that promote all of those behaviors. For example, we know that even if you take into account individual smoking, hypertension, cholesterol, and so forth, that low socioeconomic status is still very significantly associated with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. Race and ethnicity are issues, environmental factors, the built environment. If we wanted people to be able to get more activity, we have to think about how we are constructing our environment so it makes it possible for people to walk to a store or to even go for a walk in their neighborhood safely. All of those things are the social determinants of disease that have been largely unrecognized and not really dealt with effectively.
Well, it's really interesting to see where we've been and to help us figure out where we're going to go in this area in particular. Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Lamorte.
Oh, my pleasure.